the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So he's resurrected, but where is he? For the next two Sundays, we will be hearing of Jesus' post-resurrection visits, two consecutive passages from Luke's gospel that emphasize the earthiness, the grittiness, the tangible, visible nature of Jesus' return. Though we may not specifically hear it, remember doubting Thomas, who could not believe until he actually stuck his fingers in Jesus' wounds. Today's focus will be on bread, of all things, but you knew that already. Recalling Jesus' institution of communion, the Eucharist at the Last Supper, and his reenactment of that on Easter Day. But before we start, I'd like you to imagine that you have just walked into a house where bread is baking. Your grandmother's kitchen, your mother's, yours, and the scent of fresh bread fills the air. Can you smell it? Is it honey, wheat, panettone, oatmeal, raisin, sourdough, pumpernickel? So this will be a sermon of sorts on bread. The bread we know, the bread of communion, the bread of heaven. Jesus knew the centrality of bread to human culture and chose a simple loaf to describe a very complicated matter. Do you remember the surgeon Major Winchester in the television series MASH? I'm sure you do. In one episode, the sophisticated shell in which he protects himself from the horror of suffering and death suddenly breaks. He is left defenseless and goes into a deep depression, struggling to find answers to life's most perplexing problem, death. Finally, in utter desperation, he leaves the base hospital and goes up to the battalion aid station where wounded soldiers are first taken. A medical corpsman calls the surgeon over to a soldier who is dying. Winchester confirms the impending death with a sideways glance, and the patient says, "I can't see anything. Hold my hand." And the major replies, "I am." "I'm dying," the soldier moans, and this causes the surgeon's immediate unarticulated questions to come out. "Can you see anything? Can you feel anything? I have to know." But the dying soldier doesn't answer the questions. Instead, he says, "I smell bread." So remarks like this occasionally did slip into scripts, which were normally riddled with cryptic humor and sarcasm. You can't miss the significance of the bread. Bread is the symbol, even here, if not for Christ, then certainly for something eternal. It is the symbol for going home. When Jesus first took bread, blessed it and broke it, and gave it to the disciples the night before he died, he was both paying homage to the Jewish heritage and establishing a new tradition. That he chose the most holy occasion of the Jewish year, the Passover, in which to institute the first communion was not accidental, of course. He was predicting the new covenant in terms of the old. Ours is a faith based on Hebrew traditions, founded by a faithful Jew in honor and deference to his heritage. So you have to wonder what the disciples thought that Maundy Thursday. He did this strange thing with a loaf of bread, the unleavened bread that normally commemorated their trek through the wilderness. And somehow he suggested that it was about him. "This is my body." They must have thought him crazed. It wasn't his body. It was everyday bread. What could he have been thinking? And maybe they dismissed this funny thing as mumbo jumbo or just ignored him, or figured that he was expressing gratitude, as all Jews do before a meal. But if they dismissed it, on Thursday night, they certainly did not on Easter Sunday. The walk to Emmaus is one of the great narratives of the New Testament. The disciples in this story are walking back to Emmaus, dejected, sorrowful, upset over what has happened, when the third man joins them, whom we know, of course, is Jesus. They dismiss him. They get angry at him. They call him stupid, clueless stranger, who certainly has been living under a rock. When did they recognize him? Not when he spoke to them at great length about the scriptures being fulfilled, not when he interprets the events of the previous week in light of biblical prophecy, not when he clearly demonstrates his knowledge and wisdom, but only when he picks up the bread. They recognized him in the breaking of the bread, Luke says. And this is our clue to pay attention, for there is more going on in this loaf than the disciples suspected. So in the next couple of months, we will be looking at the two sacraments that our tradition observes, communion and baptism. Today we're focusing on communion, and it is, I have to admit, a little like wrestling with an octopus. Just when you think you might understand a particular aspect of it, yet another slippery, wet tendril smacks you across the cheek. The very thing that is so powerful, I think, about sacraments, all sacraments, is that they aren't words but acts. They are holy signs that point beyond themselves to something much greater and more mysterious. And of course, actions always speak louder than words. So let's just play around with the bread. Let's break it, let's smell it, let's chew it, and share it. First of all, why bread? Why not a tree, or a pillow, or a table? Why not the sun? I am the sun that rises before you. That would be good. I am the pillow on which you lay your head at close of day. I am the table to which you draw up a chair, the life before you, your work, your play, your sustenance, or the waxing and waning moon. I am the moon that shines light in the darkness, and though you may not see me, I shall return. No. By choosing bread, he engaged our bodies that hunger both for physical and spiritual nourishment. The simplicity of the choice is really brilliant, for while it addresses our elemental earthiness, it also pays tribute to the Jewish tradition, the tradition that held that there are three places of worship: the temple, the synagogue, and the home. Jesus does four things with the bread. He takes, blesses, breaks, and shares. First, he takes. And it sounds simple, doesn't it? Just take the gifts of God that are offered to you. Hungry? Grab some bread. What is suggested here is that we avail ourselves of the blessings that are offered to us, but we don't always do that, do we? I think some of the hardest words for some of us to utter, the hardest word is help. We would much rather see ourselves as helpers. We would much prefer to give assistance than to receive it. It has a lot to do with control, with the misguided notion of which just a few of us here gathered may be slightly persuaded, that we are in charge and perfectly capable of, if not running our lives, then at least negotiating trials all by ourselves. So we build shells of protection, facades of function and normalcy. One of the great blessings of ministry, perhaps I think the greatest blessing, is that a lot of the time people don't show me their facades. I am so honored that when I ask you how you are, you tell me. It saves so much heartache and so much time. It is a great relief and honor not to have to walk around on the false surface we spend so much time creating. But we do tend to cloak ourselves in protection in one way or another, to the point of convincing ourselves that we don't want the help we so desperately need. So if you've heard me say this before, but sometimes I see the grace of God in terms of bread. You may be starving, and God places a piece of bread in your lap, and it does no good whatsoever. You must pick it up and eat it. It is always offered to us, but we don't pick it up. We think we can forge ahead without help, that we can do it on our own, starving and dying. We will not lift to our lips that which will save us. Take, eat, this is my body. The second thing that Jesus do is to bless the bread. Blessing is a way of giving thanks. Here, God, this is my body, in its beauty and in its coming calamity. Whatever may befall it or me, we place ourselves in your hands. What we say when we turn to God with our ripped lives and our shattered dreams and our weeping children is, come, Holy Spirit, bless this bread. Another part of the liturgy that is often said is we lift up our hearts. We lift them up to God. And in some peculiar way, that at the brightest moments we only begin to understand, I think we are saying, thank you for my pain. Because we know that it is through our suffering that we are reconciled to God, through our suffering that we are moved finally to pick up the piece of bread that has been resting in our lap. The third thing that Jesus does with the bread is to break it. And it seems simple enough. Again, if the goal is to spread it around, it must be broken. But think about it for a minute. Think about how we marvel at these lovely full loaves. What a beautiful loaf, the bread worshipers say. How lovely the exteriors of our lives can seem, the crusts we work so hard to shape. What brings us closer to each other, and certainly to God, is becoming vulnerable, sharing our brokenness, exposing the parts of our lives that so desperately need healing. We spend an enormous amount of energy and time trying to keep ourselves together when what we really need to do is just to stop and reveal the rifts and the wounds and the heartaches and the infections. One fracture where I believe the ills and the pains of our world and society are seeping out is through our children. They seem to be the canaries in the coal mine. Depression, drugs, and alcohol are rampant among adolescents. Our children are suffering in ways many of us can barely articulate. Eating disorders of all kinds, from anorexia to compulsive overeating, are epidemic. The current rage, and I use the word purposefully, is self-mutilation. Children, especially girls, but boys are by no means immune, are cutting themselves. Why is this happening? Where is the anger coming from, and what are they seeking to express? Might it be that their emotional and psychological pain is so unmanageable, so enormous and uncontrolled, that they have to create a tangible, visible, real pain? Look, see this slash? It bleeds, it hurts. I can understand this. We have only to look at the context of today's youth and teenagers to understand why they are especially anxious. They are the children of 9/11, suckled on the threat of terrorism. And then they watched their parents try to navigate a deep economic recession. Then social media basically took over their lives so that while they were trying to get their sea legs in, of all things, adolescence, another dimension, an alternate reality, took over their lives. And when they should have been wandering around in some sense in the land of dreamland and thinking about life and its deep meaning, they were conscripted to imprisonment in Screenland. And still, young women, are exhorted to have perfect bodies? How many magazines and websites are dedicated to making women want to be thinner and more sexually attractive to men? My experience is that young women in their teens are some of the deepest thinkers around. They are probing, thoughtful, principled, idealistic, and caring people. When society meets their curiosity and search for meaning with ways to enhance their breasts and diminish their thighs, a colossal disconnect occurs. Online bullying is so rampant that self-doubt and guilt and fear abound. Are they angry? Of course they are. Are they frightened? Of course they are, and they should be. I read a journal recently written by a bulimic student at Dartmouth College, and one phrase jumped out to me. She said, "I just have to be empty enough to make room for something more." The something she was desperately searching for was meaning and guidance, love, and God. It has been my experience that adolescence can be the most spiritually hungry time of all our lives. As adolescents, I suspect that we all experienced dark and scary stretches. What Jesus is revealing in the breaking of the precious loaf is that only through expressing our brokenness and recognizing it can we be healed. The fissures in the crust, the cracks in our hearts, are where God gets in. The fourth thing that Jesus does with the bread is to share it. Excuse me. So give it away. We are called to share what we have taken. We are called to share not only our pain and our brokenness, but also our blessings and our faith. We are called ultimately to give away that which has saved us. And all of this is about what we are to do. But the great mystery and majesty of communion is that it is already done for us. It is not ultimately about what we do, but what God has already done and continues to do in things as simple and as complicated as eating. The mystery is revealed in simple things. So this has just been a first nibble on the bread of the world, the bread of heaven. Jesus hoped that we would understand that God is never far from us and that God's mercy is ours always. One of our major tasks as human beings is reconciliation and making peace, restoring love, and healing what is broken. We do that most successfully with each other after we have been reconciled with God. We can try it on our own, of course, and we usually do. But if we understand the depth of God's forgiveness and love, our own acts of reconciliation will draw from that deep well. In June of 1933, Arctic exploration was in its infancy. Former RAF pilot Frank Smith, sleep-deprived and gasping for air, was alone on Mount Everest, his fellow mountaineers exhausted and frozen, having turned back to base camp. Smith, however, kept on, though he was as weak as a kitten. The summit was 1,000 feet above him, but it might as well have been 1,000 miles. He related that he was overcome by a feeling of hopelessness and weariness. And standing at what he called the boundaries of life and death, he concluded that he could go no further. He then reached for the last morsel of food. "This," he says, "I took out of my pocket, and I carefully divided it into 2 halves and turned around to give the other half to my companion. Because although he was alone for the solo part of the climb, he had felt a strong sensation that someone else was with him." So real was this presence that he assumed his companion needed sustenance too. So he took the bread and he broke it and he sought to share it. The third man factor is named after the walk to Emmaus and Jesus' joining of the disciples. It is frequently attested to by adventurers and poets, among them Sir Ernest Shackleton and T.S. Eliot. I have been reminded this week by you about the importance, the honor of breaking bread together, of sharing our pain, our joys, and our lives with one another. By getting together, by breaking bread together, we are called to remember that we are never alone, that Christ is walking beside us whether we recognize him or not, offering grace, offering love, smelling like home. Grace and peace. So let's join together in our final hymn, number 212, Sing of One Who Walks Beside.